Hello and welcome to another episode of the Successful Home Ownership Show with your host Richard McKenzie out of the greater Cincinnati area. And today's episode is entitled Niche House in a Niche Neighborhood in a Niche Gentrification Area. What do I mean by all that? Am I just trying to be funny and have play on words? Well, of course there's that. But at the same time, in Cincinnati, for those who don't know the city well, we have so many different neighborhoods. Some of the neighborhoods have their own police force and fire department, and therefore they're incorporated, but they use the Cincinnati water, Cincinnati sewer, and the Cincinnati trash collection. So go figure, right? And then some of these neighborhoods, they all have distinct names. Some of them are kind of sort of in the regentrification docket of projects that the city of Cincinnati takes on and tries to beautify these areas and make sure that the property values stay up and you try to bring them back and so forth. Some of these places are officially being done, and then some, and if you're a realtor, real estate agent, I'll just leave it at that. If you know of any of these areas, then you definitely are experienced with the official gentrification projects and the unofficial. So this one happens to be unofficial, which is why I chose the word niche gentrification, niche neighborhood. So there's little areas that some of the agents, real estate agents, will know are sort of like secret areas of high quality homes, and maybe the houses don't turn over that much. So this is one of those. And this house, so in other words, some of these little towns or neighborhoods, they may only have like 3,000 people that live in them, okay? What the heck do you need your own police force and fire department for if you only have 3,000 people? I don't know, but somehow they do it. Maybe they just want to be different and they want to have their own thing. I'm not sure. But like if you have a business in one of these areas and it's paying a considerable chunk of the property taxes, and if that business closed down or moves, then the whole thing falls apart. It becomes a house of cards. So anyway, this particular house was from 1891. And so when you have an 1891 house, you know immediately a few things as an inspector. You know it's going to have a stone foundation because the poured foundation started somewhere around maybe 1910, and you had to be pretty darn close to the river where all the concrete manufacturing was to be able to get the concrete to a particular location fast enough back then with those types of roads, which weren't really that great. Some paved, some not. Some cobblestone, mostly dirt, a lot of them still, to get the concrete to the place to pour the concrete. So this was stone foundation, and you also know you're going to have mature trees. You also know you are going to have fireplaces that were formerly used for coal, and you're probably going to have more than one chimney, because chimneys were used for both fireplaces, and then maybe the second chimney was used for ventilating the kitchen stove, as well as furnace, you know, the coal burning furnace. So that's what you have in this particular case. Voila, that's what you have. So what some of the things that we want to make sure of when a buyer, and this is a first time home buyer, we definitely gave her a recommendation to get a sewer scope. What is a sewer scope? A sewer scope is where you pay a third party to send a camera on a cable down the sewer line, which means you need to access the sewer cleanout, which sometimes can be tricky,
and hard to find and hard to access. In this case, it had been replaced with 4-inch PVC, which was great, which means that's another good plus for this property. That's a lot of work, maybe $4,000 worth of plumbing work that had already been done. So when you have that as a home buyer, that's a plus. So back to the sewer scope. So they send the camera down there and they assess its viability all the way into the sewer, which is going to be well below the street line, and to make sure there's no roots, cracks, etc. Now this property had a very flat front yard, so that's a plus. There were no big trees in the front yard. Another plus. Why is that a plus? Because trees that are mature, if you have an 1891 house, you're going to have very mature trees over 100 years old, and they're going to have roots. Remember, I've mentioned before that if the tree canopy overhangs the house, then the roots underneath are underneath the foundation. Just a rule of thumb. All right, so we probably cleared the hurdle for the sewer line. And then the other things that we're looking at, the other big things, just like any house, the roof. What about the roof? Well, the roof was, turns out in this case, less than 3 years old, so that's good. What about those chimneys? Because it's an 1891 house. What about those chimneys? Yeah, so the chimneys, one of them had a couple of bricks missing on it. The other chimney, the chimney crown looked pretty good. Did not have any obvious cracks and whatnot. But it's always best to, if you have a missing brick or two, to have some tuck pointing done, repair by a qualified masonry contractor. And then it's also good to have metal chimney caps installed to prevent future deterioration. Now, for these particular chimneys, one was still being used to ventilate the furnace and the water heater. But the stove was, of course, it was gas, but in this particular case, it's not being used to ventilate into the chimney, which we don't expect because we have modern cooking nowadays. The other chimney was being used for fireplaces, which the fireplace has been sealed off, no longer used. And in fact, they created a wall around it, which we can't take apart and see inside. But for a future roof, that leaves the possibility on the next roof. And even if they were to have replaced this roof recently, they could have dismantled that chimney, taken it off, and roofed over it. That is something we see a lot of times when you take these shallow fireplaces and do away with them, because they're really not meant to be heavy-duty wood-burning fireplaces. They tend to be very shallow, built back in the day, so you got to be real careful. And they're not lined. Please remember, home buyers and realtors out there, your chimneys are not going to be lined when the house is built in this era. So if you're going to have a gas-burning device put in there for a vent, you know, vented gas fireplace, it's best to go with instead of vented, a vent-free, which does not require the use of the flue. And in that case, you could actually still remove the chimney. Okay? All right, so I've covered enough of that. Some of the gutter downspouts outside, and by the way, on this particular occasion, we were dealing with some decently heavy rain during the inspection. It had been raining for at least a day. And so we did take in consideration the gutters quite a bit. Gutters needed to be extended. One of them, in fact, was disconnected at the downspout. But otherwise, they are working okay. And with a stone foundation, you absolutely want to have your gutter downspouts taking water at least 5, maybe 10, 15 feet away from the foundation to keep your basement as dry as possible. The grading looked fine, which is to say how water would run towards the house or away from the house, depending on the slopage of the dirt up against the house. However, around where the air conditioner was, we found a pesky large hole with a pile of dirt, which indicates one thing, that you have a groundhog living up against your foundation. All that water and heavy rain is going to go down into that hole and find its way seeping into the basement, which it did. It made a wet spot on the floor in one area in the basement of this stone foundation.
So having only one place that water is seeping in on a stone foundation is really a good thing, especially when you can assign a root cause to it. No pun intended, root cause. Okay, so it wasn't roots, but it was a groundhog, so we put that in the report. This time of year, at the time of this recording, it was mid-January, so we absolutely couldn't run the air conditioner since we're not in Florida, and we were able to get the age of it, which was kind of tricky because we had a heavy rain. The air conditioner label faced the house. Bending over to read it and take a picture of it was pretty difficult, but I was able to determine that it's about 7 years old and properly sized for this size house. So, and we also found with this roof, you had a front porch roof and a rear deck roof. And the rear deck roof, because of one of the gutters was dropping water straight down and it was kind of missing the gutter, dropping onto the roof for the deck roof, the flashing up against the house was causing a leak, which was dripping into the doorway of the back door going onto the deck. So I'm glad it was raining at the time of the inspection. Otherwise, that might not have been found because there was so many different layers of the flashing, unless you were able to tear it apart, which we're not able to do. An inspection is a visual inspection of all the readily accessible areas without being invasive or destructive. So we can't do that. So we were able to determine where that leak was, and that was put into the report, of course. Another couple things with houses like this, that it were sided over the original wood siding. There was a couple places that needed a repair on the fascia. One other place that needed some repair on a back corner, probably bumped by a lawnmower or some other object, not sure, to dislodge some of the siding on the corner trim. So that, of course, was observed and put in the report. The deck on the front and the deck on the back were built pretty soundly. Really didn't have any complaints about those, and that was good. And also we had a random light that was in a tree, which was one of those old sodium bulb type lights, but the wire from it was not in a conduit and it was cut, disconnected. So that can be brought back to life, maybe replaced with a big LED or halogen bulb, but it would need to be rewired with a conduit that's underground, if at all possible. Okay, so that leaves us to for the outside, and then go inside. And with houses built in 1891, you're likely going to have an upgrade for the electric. But there's a few things we look for. Are all the outlets that are three-prong, are they really grounded? Do they show up as grounded? Well, these all did. And we found brand new Romex wiring in the electrical panel and mostly in the basement. But we did in the attic find at least one strand of knob and tube wiring, which is always going to need further evaluation and proper junctioning with other wiring, possibly replacing it by a licensed electrician. Because if you have insulation in your attic, you really can't add insulation on top of the knob and tube wiring because it is air cooled. You can't put stuff on top of knob and tube wiring. I can't impress upon everybody that enough. So it's best to take any wiring that is knob and tube in an attic and replace it with Romex by a licensed electrician. Then you can add insulation on top of that. So that's basically what was put in the report, of course. So testing the windows, testing the outlets, testing the plumbing fixtures. With an 1891 house, you're probably going to have some bathroom renovations done. So one of the bathrooms was a half bathroom. That all worked fine. Flushed toilets several times, ran water. Outlets were GFCI'd, so that was good. And then the upstairs bathroom was also tested. There was a stain on the kitchen ceiling with some displaced drywall. It looked like there was a leak from previous. There was no staining showing up after running water for an extended period of time. Tested with moisture meter, it was dry. So this is probably something that maybe predated
the renovation of that bathroom, which is kind of strange, but fixing that and making sure that you keep an eye on things to make sure it doesn't show up again in the future is always best. All of the kitchen wiring for the outlets also, we want to make sure stuff has been updated to GFCIs. There was actually a burn mark on one of the outlets in the kitchen, so something in that GFCI, and it did not trip properly, so that definitely needs to be replaced and repaired, and that wiring of that outlet looked at by a licensed electrician to make sure we don't have something show up again in the future and have that repeat occurrence. Okay, now there were a couple places in the same location on the first floor of where the drywall had a couple of tape cracks. These typically are innocuous, but there was one soft spot on the floor, so we basically filed that away in our mind, so when we're in the basement, we want to look and see if we can find a root cause. All right, so that leaves us to going down to the basement, which was always last in the inspection. And we generally move very slowly, try to illuminate the basement as much as possible with our bright flashlights and lights that we can find to turn on. And there were two locations. There were two locations of termite damage. One was a front-to-back joist that was down near the base of the stairs, and that was exactly where those drywall tape cracks were. So that one needed to definitely be sistered and replaced by a new joist to give that floor the new integrity that it needs. Then after we finish inspecting the furnace and the water heater, and I'll come back to the water heater in a second, there was a four-joist combined beam that actually makes the beam, because you take four joists, put them side by side by side, and two out of those four had been attacked quite a bit by termites. Now, the house is 1891. It is really, really hard to find a house that is 100 years old or more and come away without some termite damage or powder post beetle damage. More rare to have carpenter ant damage, but termite damage, yeah. So we do go very slowly in basements on purpose because we are looking at every joist that we can see. And if there's part of the basement that actually becomes a crawl space, we try to see in there as best possible. Sometimes those areas are so small you can't get in, and they were built from the top side down. And then they were, and so all the beams were put in very close to the ground, and then they put flooring over it, over that, so you can't really even get in the crawl space. This house did not have one of those situations, but I'm just making you aware that the area facing the front or facing the back, sometimes there's like a kitchen that's added on or a bathroom, and those are crawl spaces that are almost inaccessible. Okay, so back to that beam. So the beam had some plumbing going past it, had some electric going past it. I can't say it's going to be an easy repair, but it's going to need to be repaired somehow, some way. Probably additional two additional joists put on each side of the original beam, and then maybe even a post or two put in the floor to give that support. So that's going to be a bit of a difficult repair. When a client asks, how much is this going to cost to do? It's really hard to estimate. A repair like that is simply a time and materials project, and how many hours it takes and the material, because sometimes you have to dismantle some electric and plumbing to be able to actually make the repair. Then you got to put that stuff back. So if you can imagine that, you can see how it becomes a pretty difficult project. So those were the biggest things in the inspection. And then, so I will say back to the furnace. The furnace was working well, appeared to be in good shape, appeared to be well serviced. And then the water heater, this is something we see once in a while, where somebody is very diligent in energy conservation and efficiency, and they have wrapped the water heater with an insulation blanket and taped it so soundly that we can't even lift up the bottom or the top to see if we can see the label to try to get a year on that. Chances are, because of the age of the furnace and the air conditioner, I'm going to say it was probably about 7 years old, simply because those items were put in at that particular time, and also the piping coming off of it appeared to be pretty new, looked like it could have been about 7 years old. So just going by a gut feel, but we do protect our client by putting in the report to ask the homeowner what the approximate age of the water heater is, if they can remember or have some evidence of that. I left out one item that's pretty important, and that is, for an 1891 house, you're going to have either a lead water supply line, or you're going to have a fortunate situation where it's already been replaced. In this particular case, it had already been replaced with copper, again, probably 7 years ago, and so we were able to put that in the report, and that's always a good thing for a client to not have to experience a $3,000 replacement, because that's the approximate cost of replacing that. All right, so we're doing pretty good so far on this inspection, and then that leaves us, you know, the foundation walls we're looking at. Now, I had mentioned that it's a stone foundation. It had been skim coated by concrete or mortar all around, and it still looked good. There was only one crack on the foundation wall on the back, and it was hairline, and there was no seeping after all that rain going on, and it also had been tuck pointed somewhat to repair that, so I really didn't look at that as an issue, and it definitely did not appear to be a structural issue with all things taken in consideration. And that left the electrical panel. I had mentioned also the knob and tube wiring in the attic, so that was something that I was going to keep an eye on when I take off the panel and I see the wires going, leaving the panel to go out to spread out in, for the electric in the house, for the outlets, lights, and the appliances. And lo and behold, inside the panel, it had all been replaced, and there was only one double tapped breaker in there, which is a pretty easy repair. With a 20 amp breaker, a lot of times the electricians will split that into a, in this case, Square D brand, two mini split and mini breakers of 10 amps each, and be done with that. It's not a very expensive repair. So that was basically the summary of this inspection. I did want to mention that the attic had been well insulated, so that was good. There was no asbestos tape insulation anywhere. So the termite damage was which is actually structural damage, was the biggest item in this inspection. So the niche house in the niche neighborhood in the niche regentrifying area turned out very well, and the client was pretty happy with the whole situation. Not a super difficult inspection and not a whole lot of things wrong. So that's going to hopefully have a happy ending with this buyer. And until the next episode, this has been the Successful Home Ownership Show with your host, Richard McKenzie. So remember, when you're buying a house of over 100 years old, you do want to take in consideration these items that we mentioned in this podcast. And every house is unique, no matter what age it was built. And until the next episode, again, thank you for listening. If you want to check out our website, it's www.firstinspections.com with the number 1ST at the beginning. We do have 10 locations around the country. And also, you can reach us at richard@firstinspections.com. Again, the number 1ST if you have any questions. Or if you have an idea of a podcast that you'd like to hear, I'm open to anybody's suggestions. Thank you for listening.